Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage, that's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on safeguarding your Social Security number right after this message. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights. And permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by government instruments and instrumentalities and agencies like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that we can do. And the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can order yours by simply calling direct 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website, it's georgegordon.org, click onto the email and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of the mark of the beast. I pointed out that my feeling, my thinking on it is that the mark of the beast is Social Security. It's a worldwide scheme. 200 countries in the world have Social Security programs. The United States, back in 1935, when we adopted Social Security, was one of the last states in the world to succumb to this international New World Order. Remember that after World War I, it was Woodrow Wilson whose great vision it was to create this League of Nations, a United Nations. Our Congress wouldn't buy into the program, not until after World War II. So, Social Security today in America is established. In fact, it's called the third rail of politics in this country today. A system that is derived from this New World Order, this United Nations, this one world government described in the book of Revelation, which is about to be smashed by the creator of the universe. He told us in Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, and in the entire book of Revelation, he says, now, this is what's coming. A George Orwell nightmare, a dictatorial government, a worldwide government, a fascist type of government. And he described it in some detail. And then he said, I'm going to destroy it. I'm going to come back to planet Earth and I'm going to destroy it. And I'm going to destroy it right at the time in Matthew 24, the Messiah made these observations. He said, I'm going to destroy it right at the time when, if we waited any longer, it would destroy all life from off the planet. That kind of a prophecy wasn't possible until the advent of the nuclear age in 1945. Now, there's more than just nuclear weapons that threaten all life on the planet. We now have the new genetic modified organisms, a Pandora's box that we've now opened. I've covered that a number of times. For instance, the salmon on planet Earth are going to be wiped out by the genetically modified varieties, probably over the next 20 to 30 years. You see, the genetic modified organisms, that is the salmon, the artificial salmon, have already gotten loose into the wild population. And so, like controlling moths, we simply breed up and sterilize thousands of male moths and turn them loose. They breed with the females and then they die out because they can't reproduce. And that's what's happened to the salmon. We could go on and describe what's coming down around us, but my point is, and I pointed this out over the last three or four programs, that what we're facing here is this thing called the mark of the beast. And this mark of the beast, when it comes upon us, it'll be logical. It'll be reasonable. In fact, it'll even be necessary. And here's why. This is just one of the reasons why this mark of the beast will be necessary. It will be in your best interests to have this mark placed in your right hand. Protect yourself from identity theft by keeping a tight rein on your social security number. Only a few organizations have the right to demand it. Here's how to fend off the rest. I want to point out here as I make my comments that nobody is telling you to get rid of your social security number. You see, your social security number is your national identification number, and that national identification number is necessary and imperative for you to get a driver's license, welfare, food stamps, employment. You cannot buy, sell, or trade without your social security number. It isn't that it isn't possible to live your life without it. It's just that in our modern society here in America, without your social security number, you've really got to scramble to make a living without it. So, number one, it's in your best interest to have it. Although, I showed you last time, if you have it, then God's got something to say about people that voluntarily walk down and get this number placed in their hands or in their foreheads. He says, I'm going to kill them. Now, that's pretty heavy duty. Now, the reason that you're going to need this mark of the beast is because you cannot safeguard your social security number without this new added technology. He goes on to say, I think it's spooky. Everybody has that one number, and everything about you is tied to that number, worries Jim Edwards. He's the program director at WJNO in West Palm Beach, Florida. Put it in a computer and poof, there's your bank account, your phone number, and where you work. The key to all of that private information is your social security number. Edwards was way ahead of most people. Back in the early 80s, he refused to give his social security number when he enrolled at Miami-Dade Community College. The school wanted to use it as a student identification number, but Edwards held his ground and the school gave him a different number, all zeros, as he recalls. Today, schools, phone companies, utilities, health clubs, insurance companies, video stores, just about everybody wants your social security number. And some of the more prevalent uses are to get your credit rating and determine whether you pay your bills, and to keep track of you through your name and address changes. But companies also use your social security number to develop marketing lists, which they can then sell to other companies. A list with the numbers is more valuable than one without it. And why should you care about who sees your social security number? Well, the more people who see it, the more susceptible you are to identity theft, where you are victimized by someone fraudulently using your name and credit report to steal money. Identity theft costs American businesses billions each year, and costs that are eventually passed on to all consumers. The toll on victims is heavy, too. The California Public Interest Research Group estimates that, on average, an identity theft victim will spend 175 hours, and $800 trying to clear his record of fraudulent charges. I've seen accounts opened with wrong names and different addresses. As long as there's a social security number, that's all some of them care about, says Linda Foley of the Identity Theft Research Center in San Diego. Now, who has the right to ask for your digits? Well, while any business can ask for your social security number, there are very few entities that can actually demand it. Motor vehicle departments, tax departments, and welfare departments, for example. And also, social security numbers are required for transactions involving taxes. So that means banks, brokerage houses, employers, and the like also have a legitimate need for your social security number. Now, I can remember as a youngster, social security from 1935 to 1964 was used only for social security purposes. But Congress back in 1964 decided that they were going to use the social security number as a taxpayer identification number, that they would correlate your social security and your income tax. And from that point on, you have to use a social security number on your income tax report. You see, up to 64, you didn't use it. So it was Congress that expanded the use of social security. And it's interesting to note that social security is tied to the income tax. In other words, you cannot pay your income tax without a social security number. So the two work together. The two are one and the same. Social Security and the income tax. Now, most other businesses have no legal right to demand your number. And there is no law prohibiting a business from asking for your social security number. But people don't know that they can say no, says Carolyn Cheesham of the Social Security Administration. We recommend that you ask if they'll accept an alternative piece of identification. If they don't, flat out refuse to do business with them. But bear in mind that there's a possibility that they will refuse to provide whatever product or service that you're seeking. And so when you want, you know, the telephone turned on and the telephone company says no number, no telephone, you know, you capitulate, don't you? Now, the truth of the matter is you can open a bank account, you can get telephone service, you can get the gas, the water, and everything turned on without a social security number. It's protected under the Privacy Act. Most people don't know that. Most people believe that they have to use that social security number. But as the article points out, except for taxes and driver's license and a few other places like that, in fact, in Missouri, you can get a driver's license without a social security number. And I've talked before about states that require it. There's only 13 states now that require it. There were 37. Now there's only 13 that require a social security number to get a driver's license. You see, it's illegal. 13 states still bamboozle their citizens into using it. But if you really put your mind to it and you knew how, you can get a driver's license without one. Now, that's assuming, of course, that you don't have a social security number, because the Supreme Court has said if you've got a social security number, you have to use it. And the social security number creates a guardian ward relationship between you and the state. Now, I don't know why a free sovereign American would want a social security number and a guardian ward relationship with the state, but for some reason, we do. Now, Edwards, for example, will not give his social security number to his doctor's office. And when you go to the doctor's office and fill out the medical information, they ask for the social security number. I leave it blank. Nothing happens. I'm not reporting income from them. In fact, chances are good that many companies that routinely ask for social security numbers will do business with you even if they can't have your number. That's always been my experience. When you put their feet to the fire in the final analysis, they'll do business with you because they want your money and because it's illegal to refuse it if you just know how. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. Tonight's report on how to safeguard your Social Security number. Well, you know, Joe Smith started the day early, having set his alarm clock made in Japan for 6 a.m. while his coffee pot made in Japan is perking. He puts his blow dryer made in Taiwan to work and then shaves with his electric razor made in Hong Kong. He puts on a dress shirt made in Taiwan, his designer jeans made in Singapore, and a pair of tennis shoes made in Korea. Then after cooking up some breakfast in his new electric skillet made in the Philippines, he sits down to figure out on his calculator made in Mexico how much he can spend today. Then after setting his watch made in Switzerland to the radio made in Hong Kong, he goes out and gets in his car made in Germany and goes looking, as he has for many months, for a good-paying American job. Well, after the end of another discouraging and fruitless day, Joe decides to relax for a while, so he puts on a pair of sandals made in Brazil, pours himself a glass of wine made in France, and then turns on his TV made in Japan. And he wonders again why it is that he can't find a good-paying American job. Well, you know, instead of a good-paying American job, why doesn't Joe look for a good-paying American private business dealing in property instead of income? Now, if you'd like to tap into the power of private business, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package, and let me tell you how. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free of charge. And you can call right now to order yours. That number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and then send me an email request for the General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about how to protect your Social Security number from identity theft. You know, at the power company, they ask for a Social Security number to open an account, but it's not required, says Michael Laundis of the Long Island Power Authority. The Social Security number is just part of the customer's record. It's a common problem with utility accounts that we find, and that is that people open an account, then they default, and then they reopen another account using the same Social Security number. And when we have the Social Security number, we can use that number to discover who the deadbeats are. Kimberly Brown at Bell South headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia, says there's a procedure that the company follows if someone doesn't want to give his number. Now, let me suggest this. If you walk in and you say, I don't want to give you my number, you know what they're going to tell you? We will not turn on your power. And 99% of people, when we won't turn on your power, we won't turn on your telephone, we'll then give them the number. And that's because virtually everybody in America has the number. Only 14 million people in this country don't have it. So it's up to you to put the pressure on. And you can do that. I mean, you can tell them about the Privacy Act of 1974, and you can cite the statutes that guarantee your privacy concerning the Social Security number. The problem with your Social Security number is that you've got it out in so many locations now. I mean, the credit people have it. And once they have it, they don't ever have to rescind it. They don't ever have to give it back. They don't ever have to stop using it. So it's up to you to put the pressure on if you don't want to use it. We ask them to fill out a questionnaire to determine their payment history, and we don't do a credit check. We depend on long-term honesty. The questionnaire determines the Bell South rating for them, and then that determines whether they'll have to pay a deposit to establish service. What I do is I just tell them, let me pay the deposit, because they keep your deposit for 1 year, and then they give it back anyway. Now, your cat is sick, and so the veterinarian says, give us your Social Security number. Linda Foley of the Identity Theft Research Center says that she brought her critically ill cat to a veterinarian's office and balked when she was asked for her Social Security number. If that happens to you, why don't you tell them to get the cat's Social Security number? I said, why? Will it be my cat's ID number? And they said, no, but if you'll give us a check, we want a driver's license and a Social Security number in case the check bounces. I said, I'd pay by credit card. And they said, it's our policy to get the number. Now, you see, that's the kind of thing you run up against. It's our policy. And like I said, all you have to do if you're a businessman is to put the pressure on the customer coming in the door. It's our policy. But that's not the law of the United States. The policy of a company is not the law. So what happens here is that most people capitulate at this point, after all my cat's sick, and okay, here's my number. This is the point in time when you want to dig in your heels and tell them you're not going to get my number and you're going to fix my cat, and if you don't, there's going to be litigation. Now, you know, if you want the litigation, let's get after it. Now, of course, most people are unable to follow through on the litigation. And that's because you'd have to go hire an attorney, wouldn't you? And if you got to go hire an attorney to sue the veterinarian because the veterinarian is demanding your Social Security number, which he isn't entitled to by law, and then denied you service, is a discriminatory policy. It's a discriminatory policy against people that don't want to give their Social Security numbers out because they're concerned about identity theft. Now, if you were a good, competent pro se litigant, for $135 in my state, you could walk in and file a complaint against the veterinarian and let him go spend $5,000 hiring an attorney to defend against you. Now, how much was he going to charge you to fix your sick cat? It sure as heck wasn't $5,000. Now, you do that a time or two in your community, and you'll find out that you'll be treated like a pariah, like a piranha in a fishbowl. Nobody wants to mess with you. So I said, if I give you a credit card and refuse to give you my Social Security number, you'd let my cat die right now. They looked at me and the cat and said, well, give us the card and we'll take care of it. I was upset about the cat, but I was frustrated by the way I was being treated. It was so unnecessary. Social Security numbers and identity theft. Well, Social Security numbers exist for the purpose of tracking earnings and paying benefits. Now, although President Franklin Roosevelt signed an order requiring federal agencies to use Social Security numbers for record-keeping systems, they were never meant to be used by businesses as an identifier, but have taken on that role because everyone has one, and because everyone volunteers it. That's all it really boils down to. It's our policy to get this identifier. It's because everybody has one. Now, as I pointed out, not everybody has one. 14 million of us don't. And there are a few people every year that rescind their Social Security numbers. Now, of course, if you do that, you will lose all of your Social Security benefits. You will lose your guardian-ward relationship with the government. You will take on the character of being independent. That's a wild new concept, isn't it? California is leading the way with its law barring businesses, healthcare providers, and schools from publicly posting Social Security numbers or requiring them for access to products or services. Printing of Social Security numbers on cards required for accessing products or services, or requiring an individual to use his or her Social Security number to access a website unless a password is also required to access the site, or printing an individual's Social Security number on any materials that are mailed to the individual. Now, the state of New York limits the use of Social Security numbers in schools and colleges. The New York public and private schools cannot publicly display Social Security numbers, and many are opting to assign students identification numbers. Arizona has passed similar legislation, and Foley says that she hopes other states will follow suit and be even more restrictive so that Social Security numbers will eventually be used only for a few selective purposes. But Foley says that until that happens, the first defense against the fraudulent use of Social Security numbers are the companies that issue credit. Are they verifying that the person applying for credit is the true consumer? And are they looking carefully for red flags that might alert them to possible fraudulent use? If a credit application has a last name spelled incorrectly or an address different from the credit record, that should provide someone or provoke someone into calling the consumer. Now, some privacy rights proponents say social security numbers shouldn't be used for obtaining credit. Does that mean a second number would have to be issued for people seeking credit? Would that be any better than the current system? More protections in California. Perhaps California's newly enacted privacy law offers a better option. In order to limit the use of social security numbers, the law allows a consumer to place a security freeze on his credit report. The freeze prohibits consumer credit reporting agencies from releasing the consumer's credit report or any information from that report without express authorization from the consumer. Time will tell if that provision works better than the more common alerts that many people put on their credit reports. With an alert, a consumer is supposed to be notified that someone is attempting to obtain credit in his or her name. But stories abound of breakdowns in the system. If someone uses your social security number to obtain credit and doesn't pay the bills, you'll discover the fraud as soon as the bill collectors come calling. But sometimes an identity thief actually pays the bills, and in those instances, it could be a long time before you discover the fraud. The best way to find out if someone is fraudulently using your social security number is to request copies of your credit reports at least once a year. There are three main credit reporting agencies, and it's a good idea to get a copy of your report from each agency so you can check for discrepancies. And you can order your credit report from TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian. Again, I've solved my problem by simply rescinding my social security number and living my life without it. Most people can't do that because they depend upon their employment. And without a social security number, your employer does not have to employ you. The Supreme Court decided that just recently in the last 3 years. They've changed the law as it applies to social security numbers. In other words, if you've got a number, you've got to use it. And if you're going for employment and your employer doesn't want to employ you because you don't have one, there's nothing you can do about it. Used to be you could sue your employment for discrimination because, after all, there are 14 million people in the country that don't have them. And there's no law that requires you to have a social security number. Did you know that? There's no law that requires you to get a social security number at any time for any cause or reason. It's totally voluntary. That's why the income tax is voluntary. And the social security number is your taxpayer identification number. You don't have to become a taxpayer. Now, of course, if you don't have a social security number and you choose not to become a taxpayer, then you don't have the same benefits, those 108 benefits that come from Social Security that are used every day in trade, commerce, business, and industry, such as employment. For instance, George Gordon cannot go down to the Ford Motor Company and get a job. I can't get employment anywhere in the nation. That's why I have to rely upon private business. I am a private businessman, and I deal in gold and silver coin. I don't deal in checks and commercial paper. In case you hadn't heard, since 1986, we now have our gold and silver coin back. So we have a dual monetary system in the United States in which we Americans can now use gold and silver coin. Most people don't use it because they've been divorced from gold and silver for so long they don't know how. But I can remember 25 or 30 years ago, patriots coast to coast and border to border were lamenting the fact that we didn't have gold and silver coin. And now when the gold and silver coin's been given back to us, they don't use it anyway. So of what value was it? Of what need was it? Well, evidently God thought that it was very important because we got our gold and silver back, and those of us that want to practice the law of Moses can. You just have to know how. All right, we've got to take another break right now, so hang on. We'll be back right after this break. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, which was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, You and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits, such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush Sr. back in 1992, and then George Bush Jr. in 2000, reiterated and said that what Americans wanted is jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. These authorities all recognize that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in employment, and it's certainly not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business and sales. It's not in public business, and it's certainly not in jobs, jobs, jobs. That's why I contend that it's time that you cashed in on your inheritance and learned how to collect the benefits of the old covenant and that old covenant contract and to collect it in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. That's real property instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on my CD Home School for Adults and order my free General Law CD package at the same time. Now, that CD package is free. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's informative and it's entertaining. It's educational and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to my website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine and then send me an email request for the free General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. You can do it right now before you forget. And remember, the business school is available on compact disc for adult home study. That's not free, but it's available for home study. You don't have to come to the law school to go through that business school. Remember that number again, 417-273-4967 or georgegordon.org. RFID, that's Radio Frequency Information Identifier. I guess that's RFID is identification, Radio Frequency Identification. Well, a German consultant has released a tool that its creator says will allow modifications of the code stored within the RFID tags, theoretically allowing consumers to wreak havoc in future retail deployments. I know that's the first time I've ever heard anybody complain about us retail customers going in here and wreaking havoc with Walmart. I've been opposed to these RFID tags because it invades my privacy. These RFID tags, at a point in time, as the technology evolves and becomes more sophisticated, they'll be able to read those with the GPS satellites, just like they'll be able to read that chip in your hand, that implant. Now, that's technology that's in the works, but it's coming. Now, we're not going to stop this RFID technology. It's coming. So it simply means that you and I, in order to maintain our Fourth Amendment rights to privacy, are going to have to be more vigilant and we're going to have to be craftier than we've been in the past. And I've told my students that over the years, that I can be just as private as I want to be. But going into a Walmart store and buying a product like Gillette razor blades, and then bringing those razor blades home and sticking them in my medicine cabinet and using them, I become the proximate cause of my own injury unless I can disable that RFID tag. Now, I don't blame Walmart for wanting to put an RFID tag in a product so that they can catch the thieves that are shoplifting in their stores. But once I get that outside the store, I want to be able to disable that tag, and I don't want anybody else in the world to know whether I use Charmin toilet paper or Great Northern. Put another way, I don't want you to know what I wipe my butt with. That's private information, and I want to keep it that way. So, in order for me to do that, I'm going to have to go the extra mile. It isn't going to be Walmart. It's not going to be Gillette. And it's not going to be Charmin. It's going to be George Gordon that does it. It's going to be you if you want to maintain your privacy. Now, the RF dump software allows a user equipped with an RFID reader, a laptop or a PDA, and a power supply to rewrite the data stored in ISO 15693 tags. The most common tags used to host the EPA, that's the electronic product code information traditionally stored in the barcodes. Now, although each RFID tag carries with it a unique product ID, the EPC is stored in the user area portion of the chip, which allows it to be rewritten. Oh, here comes the hackers. Now, that poses problems to both consumers and retailers, because the RF dump author, Lucas Grunwald, he's a senior consultant with Hildesheim, German-based DN Systems Enterprise Solutions, said that on the one hand, consumers could defraud a retailer by reprogramming a premium item as a cheap commodity. On the other hand, consumers would have to worry about the items in their shopping carts being read by Big Brother, or at least the many retailers in a shopping mall. So, you buy something and you're walking around in the shopping mall, and any retailer there can identify what it is you've got. Now, I'm not too concerned about that. If I am walking through the mall and I've got my goods in a paper bag or in a shopping bag, if I was carrying them in the open and everybody could see what I had, I bought a teddy bear and I'm carrying it around under my arm, where I put it in a bag and the guy can tell that I got a teddy bear in my bag by reading the RFID code tag from his store, that doesn't bother me. It's when I take that product home, and I've got it in my living room, and you can read that tag by driving by. Now, just to give you an illustration as to how this privacy thing works, you know the Nielsen ratings you hear about all the time? Well, nobody calls you on the phone and asks you what television show you're watching. They just drive down the street and point the antenna at your living room, point it at your house, and they can tell from the instrumentation what channel you're tuned into. That's the way they do that. Now, we've had that kind of technology for a long time. It's radio frequency identification in airplanes, for instance. You could be flying along and then go from radio station to radio station. You can home in on a radio station, let's say, in Kansas City, and you can be in Springfield, Missouri, and all you do is just turn the radio identifier on and it tunes into that station. You can be listening to the station, and when you cross over their antenna somewhere around Kansas City, which is marked on your map, you know immediately when the needle turns around 180 degrees. You were going to it, now you're going from it. Well, now this kind of technology, and this is where the technological revolution conflicts with our constitutional rights. We want to remain or maintain our privacy. But you can't maintain your privacy if you go along with these products and these systems that are being created. And after all, they're being created to benefit you, aren't they? You see why it makes all the sense in the world? It's why I mentioned, you know, the mark of the beast, when it comes to fruition, will just make all the sense in the world. It's just because that's the way life is, isn't it? I mean, after all, You want to protect your identification from thieves. So you say, well, gosh, I don't want my social security number out there, but you've got to have the social security number because government requires it, business requires it when you seek employment, banks require it when you open a bank account, the IRS requires it when you file your taxes, the Department of Motor Vehicles requires it when you apply for a driver's license, and so on. And so what happens is, all of these institutions making all of these demands upon you, pretty soon you just give up and quit, don't you? And when you give up and quit, then you give up your constitutional rights, your right to privacy. And of course, to most people, privacy doesn't mean very much. To some of us, it does. To me, it's very important. So I will go the extra mile. I will solve the RFID problem. I've already solved the Social Security problem. Now, the tool was released as part of a talk at the Black Hat briefings here dedicated to IT security. And there's an even worse scenario. It's only a matter of time before someone puts a root exploit on one of these tags and hacks into your supply chain, Grunewald said. You see, RFID tags have been, and they're seen as a revolutionary device by retailers, manufacturers, and the military. Theoretically, a pallet or product with an embedded RFID tag can be tracked more accurately, resulting in more efficient inventory management systems that could be used to quickly replace umbrellas, for example, that sold out during a rainstorm. Now, the Gap and Italy's Benetton already use the tags in their stores. In Europe, the Gillette company has used RFID tags inside packages of razor blades to minimize theft. Grunewald reported, and Walmart stores, the world's largest company, and the U.S. Department of Defense have separate programs to rework their supply chains around RFID tags by next year. Now that's 2005. And by 2007, all manufacturers, retailers, drugstores, hospitals, and small retail stores will use the tags, according to Robin Coe. He's a member of the Auto ID Labs Industry Consortium. Already, RFID tags are popping up inside consumer loyalty cards. Now, the assumption is that the military will have the budget to buy tamper-proof tags, but not so for retailers and manufacturers who will likely try to scrimp on the cost of the tags. The most common EPC tags store the item information in clear text inside the tag and then allows for rewriting of the data. Each tag sits idle until powered by the RF energy emitted from the gate and can then be read. Using the RF dump tool, a shopper could covertly rewrite the tag inside the store, creating all sorts of criminal mischief. The shopper could reprogram a bottle of shampoo as cream cheese or rewrite a pornographic DVD as children's entertainment, Grunewald said. The trick only works if a shop has implemented automatic checkout, or at least one that doesn't encourage human intervention. Some retailers use a video camera to double-check items, according to a Defense Department IT employee attending the convention. Germany's Metro Group has already deployed an RFID-equipped store in Rheinberg, Germany, complete with self-checkout stands. For insights on security coverage around the web, check out eWeek.com, Security Center editor Larry Salzberg's weblog. Now, a second system at the store exit checks to see if the user has paid for all of his items. Then it supposedly writes O's in the user ID field, erasing the tag for privacy purposes. Alarms will sound if a shopper attempts to sneak away. Now, one way to exasperate store owners, Grunewald said, is to buy an individual tag, program it with item data, then slip the tiny tag near the gate. After 5 minutes of shrieking sirens, the gate will be turned off, he said. However, the tags require the RF energy to function. Wrapping a tag in aluminum foil blocks the radio waves and prevents a tag from being identified. Security firm RSA Security has also released a so-called blocker tag to prevent shoppers' privacy. But the RF dump can still access and attack the stored information, Grunewald said. All right, so now we can see that there's going to be a tag that can be zeroed out when you walk out of the store. Now, if that's the case, you know, my objection to the RFID evaporates. All I'm concerned about is my privacy. I pay for what I buy, and I don't mind Walmart identifying their products to prevent people from stealing them. And I think as time progresses along, the technology will be developed to zero those tags out when we walk out of the store, and if not, we'll do it when we get home. All right, stand by. We'll be right back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Well, back in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Well, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit, credit cards, debt, and usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there isn't any difference in the value of gold and silver coin as compared with clad coin or currency. And you know that's very true when you're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 6-to-1 difference in purchasing power of gold over paper, and there's a 6-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper money over gold. Now, you know, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew, and they knew as a matter of law, that gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order to establish our property rights. Well, listen, Congress and the politicians did not take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away their gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's right to property and destroy their property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. Now, let me teach you how to do just that in my business school, which is now on compact disc for adult home study. Now, if you'd like more information about my private business school, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, and it's educational. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now to order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. And my business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. I got a letter in here the other day along this line of Social Security and how it's being used or misused. It says, I live in Wisconsin and the DNR is requiring a Social Security number to purchase licenses. Now, I had thought, since the state of Wisconsin does not require me to have a Social Security number, how does the WDNR have the authority to do so? Whatever happened to the 1974 Social Security Privacy Act, which protects us from these people? And by the way, taxes that the government impose are illegal, since we were all fooled into a contract that we had no consideration for. So in short, we don't owe taxes. Technically speaking, I pay them to avoid trouble. Do you have any suggestions on how to go about taking these sort of things to court? And isn't the WDNR infringing on my right to privacy? And where do these people get off playing God in the way of supplying me the privilege to hunt God's creatures when the right was mine to start with? God said so. He says it's a sad day for freedom, and one day it'll come to pass that they will pay for these trespasses. I'm not here to judge, but I know that they will be judged. God help us all. And he signs it, Pete. Well, all right, Pete, let's take these one at a time. The DNR and licenses. The Department of Natural Resources is actually selling you those deer and fish. It's a commercial venture. Let me tell you a little story. I had a student one time up in North Idaho. He had 5 illegal deer in his locker, in his freezer, in his home. And the fish and game people came out. Somebody had reported it, evidently, and they confiscated it all and gave him a ticket, and he went to court. And in his trial, he argued that he needed those deer to feed his family. And the judge says, no, you don't. No, you don't. You see, you've got a Social Security number, and you can get a job and go earn the money to feed your family, or you can get welfare, and the state will feed your family. Now, that tells us that this is commercial. Social Security ties you to commerce, trade, commerce, business, and industry under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, the Commerce Clause. So all the state is doing is selling you these fish and these deer. All right, now let's put the shoe on the other foot. I had another student up in Alaska. He had rescinded his Social Security number. He was down at the mouth of the Kenai River, which empties into Cook Inlet, and he had 237 salmon up on the bank. Ranger Rick came by, saw the salmon, said, "Where's your fishing license?" Now, if you look down Cook Inlet from the mouth of the Kenai River, you'll see seining nets out into Cook Inlet. And across the Kenai River, there's a cannery. Now, normal people get a fishing license, catch the fish, pay the taxes, sell the fish to the cannery, take the money, and go to Safeway and buy their groceries and feed their family. This guy was doing something a little different. He was fishing in the mouth of the river, which is prohibited conduct, and he had 237 fish, which is way more than he's supposed to have as a sport fisherman, and as a commercial fisherman, he needed a commercial fishing license. He didn't have any of the above. Case went to trial, ultimately went to the state Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, "Well, wait a minute. This guy is entitled to these fish because he's a subsistence fisherman." You see, one is commercial, and what the state is saying is that you're a commercial fisherman, and you need a license, and that's why they want your Social Security number. And if you have the Social Security number, you have to give it. So says the Supreme Court in the case that came out of California. If you didn't have the Social Security number, you wouldn't have to use it, would you? Now, there's another little factor that comes in here. It's probably true that the DNR is not entitled to your Social Security number as an identifier. And that's because of the 1974 Public Law 93-579, cited at 88 Statute 1896 as amended. And the relevance of this act is simply that it highlights the importance of privacy interests associated with Social Security information. And in C.F. Woolman versus United States, cited at 501 Federal Supplement 310, it was decided. It was vacated on other grounds, but it was decided. The Section 7 of the Privacy Act was intended, the district court found, to block indiscriminate governmental use of Social Security information as the universal identifier. See United States versus $200,000 in U.S. currency, 590 Fed Sup 866. Southern District of Florida, 1984. I won't take the time to read the entire opinion and the rest of the information, but I think you've got a good point. And if you were to take this to litigation, the correct form of action is called a writ of mandamus. And, of course, the question is, do you have a Social Security number? Now, of course, if you've got one, you may be disappointed. If you don't have one, you're entitled to the license without a Social Security identifier. My question is, why in the world would you want the license if you're not engaged in commerce? Now, sport fishing is commerce, as is commercial fishing. Subsistence fishing or subsistence hunting, you have a right to, but you don't have any right to act in commerce without these licenses. I just cited to you the 1974 Privacy Acts, and you mentioned in your letter here that taxes are illegal. No, they're not. Taxes are legal, and it's legal in your case because you have a Social Security number, which identifies you as a taxpayer, and you did that voluntarily. Now, I don't have a Social Security number, but as an American citizen, I'm a taxpayer. All U.S. citizens are taxpayers. But you cannot file and pay a tax without the Social Security number identifier. So the trick is in keeping your income under $7,200 a year, which was the last filing minimum that I know about. So my income is under $7,200 a year. It doesn't trigger the filing minimum. So if you'll take a look at gold and silver coin, I think that if you would practice gold and silver coin, just weights and balances under the Mosaic Law, thou shalt not steal and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag, I think you'll do a lot better. But don't believe that taxes are illegal. And you pay the tax anyway. Well, if the tax is illegal, why would you pay it? Why would you do something that's wrong because it's expedient? No man can serve two masters, says Matthew 6:24. Why would you tithe and pay the tax? You serve Baal because you're afraid of Baal. And, you know, the righteous are as bold as lions, but the wicked flee when none pursue. Tuck that one away in your heartbeat. And hunting versus property, I explained that. The state is God's sovereign worship. Worship means obedience to law. It's obedience to Baal. And just in case you'd wondered about that, in Leviticus 19, I believe it is. Let me flip over here and see if I'm correct. It's Leviticus 18, verses 1 through 5. It says, "The Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, You speak unto the children of Israel, and you say to them that I'm the Eternal, your God. God is a sovereign. Wisconsin is a sovereign. Wisconsin is a God. Wisconsin is a lawmaker. God is God, and God is a lawmaker." That's the definition of a sovereign, a lawmaker. Now listen to what God has to say about making law. He said, "After the doings of the land of Wisconsin wherein you dwell, shall you not do, and after the doings of the land of the United States where I bring you, shall you not do, and neither shall you walk in their ordinances. You shall do my judgments and keep my ordinances to walk therein. I'm the Eternal your God. You shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them. I'm the Eternal." Now you mentioned that these are God's creatures out there. Well, wait a minute. The state of Wisconsin has usurped the power of God, and they claim that those deer and those fish belong to the corporation of Wisconsin. And when you get that license, you admit, you concede that their position is true, accurate, and correct. I don't have a fishing license, and I don't have a hunting license. I don't think you should have one either. Not in comply with the law of God. But then, if you've got a social security number, and you are in a guardian ward relationship with your God, the state of Wisconsin, can't you see the logic in having a fishing license and a hunting license? If you're going to worship the God of Wisconsin, shouldn't you obey all of the laws of Wisconsin? And if you're going to obey God and keep His commandments, then shouldn't you obey all of the laws of the God of creation? And then only obey the laws of the state of Wisconsin which do not conflict with the law of God. Now, in Acts 5, verse 29, you see that admonition. It says that we ought to obey God rather than men. So if there's a choice to be made between obedience to Wisconsin and obedience to God, God comes first. And if you go to jail over it, that's a part of the process. You know, all of the apostles spent some time in jail. Just take a look at the New Testament, and you'll see that Peter, Paul, James, and John all spent some time in the slammer. And the Messiah, Jesus, was executed as a criminal felon. A criminal felon for treason. So I just thought I'd point that out. When you go to jail, you're in good company. All right, we're going to have to drop it right there, and we'll have to come back here and take this up again next time. Let's see where my paperwork is here. You've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to my website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log and schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. There's the signal that says my time's up. I'll have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here again tomorrow, God willing. Same time, same station. So until then, goodbye, friends.